Next case is 071015, Maytag v. Electrolux Home Products.
May it please the Court, Your Honor, this is a 35 U.S.C. 112 written description case. The lower court held the two Maytag patents in suit invalid under the written description requirement of 112 paragraph 6, holding that the claims which describe grooves in general with regard to the inner surface of the washing machine basket were not supported by the specification because the specification was limited to teardrop-shaped grooves. We believe that the district court erred in that conclusion and in holding the claims invalid, and that this court should reverse. First of all, and importantly, written description, as this court has held and said consistently, is a fact question. And so we are dealing with a fact question on this de novo review of a grant of summary judgment. A fact question which I might add that the district court itself said in its own opinion was a close question.
Well, there's no dispute that the specification only refers to these teardrop-shaped grooves, correct?
There is no dispute that the only groove illustrated is a teardrop-shaped groove. We do not say, and we do not agree, and the specification does not say that it is the only shape of
No, groove. But I mean, it only refers
It is the
to
only
that.
One illustrated, that is correct.
Okay, and can you point to anything in the specification that suggests that other shapes are suitable?
What I can point to in the specification is that it illustrates at column 2, line 22, that everything that is disclosed here is a preferred embodiment. It's said twice in the specification, one at of the 909 patent at column 2, line 22, which says, we are hereafter describing the detailed description of preferred embodiments. Well, if that's preferred embodiments, a fair reading of that is there are other embodiments. And then, Your Honor, at the last paragraph before the claims, there is a warning which the counsel on the other side, our colleagues, describe as boilerplate. But a fair reading of that says, this is a description of preferred embodiments, and we intend to be bound by what comes afterwards in the appended claims. Now, there's two instances of specific reference that what is disclosed here is preferred embodiments. There is no limitation or no narrowing of the subject matter as there was in the cited cases of Gentry, as there was in the cited cases of Taranzo of the district court, that denigrated or disparaged other shapes. And we think that's significant.
How about the testimony of the inventors who said that he didn't invent anything other than?
That is not what the inventor said.
What did he say?
What the inventor said was when the basket was raised up, the accused infringing basket of Electrolux was raised up and shown it to him, it was asked if he invented this. And he said, no, I did not invent that. That's what he said. And of course, he didn't invent that. He didn't invent the Electrolux basket. He invented the Maytag basket. And that's the context of his answer.
They weren't talking about the shape.
They were talking about the basket. The basket was held up and said, did you invent this? And the answer of Mr. Gray was no. He did not invent that.
If I could ask about a passage in the specification in the summary of the invention section. There's a reference to a couple of the objectives of the invention, the objects
yes.
of the invention. And then there's the statement, these and other objects of the present invention are accomplished by providing a molding apparatus comprising a mold core, which is fixed at one end and includes teardrop-shaped projections. And then further
yes.
language. But that's the guts of the statement. It sounds like a pretty conclusive statement that this is the characterization of the invention. And then the knit lines in the two previous paragraphs, which are the objects that are attempted to be achieved, elimination of the knit lines, are both tied to the teardrop-shaped grooves. Why isn't it fair for the district court to have said, okay, you've defined the scope of your invention and the scope of your disclosure. You can't then come back later and say, well, the disclosure is actually much broader than that.
Well, I don't believe they ever came back and said the disclosure was much broader than that.
Well, the claims do, though, right?
Yeah.
The claims are based on the assumption that the disclosure supports a much broader invention.
And when the claims were added, the prosecuting attorney said to the examiner that we believe we are entitled to these claims that refer to grooves only based upon the prior art. And I think it is worthy of note, Your Honor, that the examiners, and if you look at Professor Keeson's affidavit here, he points out that he researched the history of these examiners. They examined more than 2,000 applications collectively between the two of them, and one examiner more than 90 in the same art here, and they never once raised a written description objection. When the attorney said, we think we are entitled to broader claims based on the art, and put the language groove in, the issue was not ever raised.
Well, the breadth has to be based on the spec, right?
In order
to get priority.
It is true. The breadth has to be based upon the specification.
Right.
And we submit that a fair reading of this specification is that teardrop-shaped grooves is a groove that works, yes, but nowhere do we say it is the only groove, unlike Gentry. Nowhere do we say, and other shapes won't work, like Taranzo. That's the critical distinction in our minds, Your Honor. And what we do say is, on two separate occasions, that what we are describing here are preferred embodiments.
Now, you have one of your claims, I believe it's 25 of the 909, but correct me if I've got the claim number wrong, has no requirement of any grooves at all.
Right? That is true, Your Honor.
Okay, so that's 25. Just all it has is the plastic with holes in it, right?
Beveled holes.
Right. Now, here's my problem with your argument, and you can address this if you would. You say in the spec that, and I'm looking again at column 1, you say that it has been proposed to mold a plastic washing machine basket as a unitary structure and then perforate the holes during a subsequent manufacturing step. This method leaves burrs and sharp edges, blah, blah, blah. You solve that problem, as I understand it, with the groove, the teardrop-shaped grooves, right? But if that problem does not require the teardrop-shaped grooves to be solved, why haven't you just disclaimed the very thing that you claim in Claim 25? Because you've criticized the prior art, which has the holes punctured in the basket.
Well, because the teardrop shape is on the inside of the basket.
Oh, I understand.
The beveled groove is on the outside of the basket, and the beveled groove has slanted shoulders like this so that the mold pin can pull out and create draft, not leaving behind any burrs. And so that's another feature of the mold and another feature of the basket. That's different than a straight-walled hole where the die, as it would go through, Your Honor, would in fact pull out and leave burrs behind.
So you're saying that the claim the claim distinguishes the prior art that you refer to on column 1 by the claim I was just referencing. What's the difference between that and the prior art? You've said
prior
simultaneously art. Forming the apertures or forming the apertures separately doesn't work.
Right.
All right. And what is it that your non-groove claim shows works, whereas the prior art doesn't work?
The non-groove claim relates to the beveled surface, which is slanted like this, and the pin fits in it and pulls out and away from it, creating draft, instead of straight walls where it pulls out and rubs against them, creating burrs.
And where is that revealed in the spec? Is there a discussion of this? I don't want to pin you down to this. Is there a discussion of that
of non-burrs,
function?
Yes.
Well, but of the effect of the beveling to produce the non-burrs? Well, I'll take your word for it if you tell me it's in there. I don't want to.
It is in there, okay. Your Honor. I think it's in at column 3, looking at my copy of the spec, between lines 10 and line 20. But it is there. Now, if I can summarize our position as to why we believe it's unfair, given the totality of the specification, to limit us to teardrop shape only, it is because, first of all, it's our spec says that we are disclosing preferred embodiments.
But doesn't the summary of invention indicate that the elimination of knit lines is really at least a purpose of the invention?
The summary of the invention says that elimination of knit lines on the inner surface of the basket is, yes, is one of the objects of the invention.
Okay, and doesn't column 5, somewhere in 48 to 55 or 48 to 56, indicate, say, that you need the tear-shaped projections in order to avoid the knit line?
No, it doesn't. It says it is important to note that the teardrop-shaped projections permit the plastic to flow around the core.
Without creating knit lines.
Yes.
Which would be inherently formed without the presence of the teardrop-shaped projections. Doesn't that... Why am I not seeing that this... I'm reading this as saying that the teardrop-shaped projections are necessary to avoid the knit lines.
Says important. Important doesn't mean necessary. Important does not mean essential or critical. Those are different words.
Well, except, yeah, but it goes on to say which would be inherently be formed without the presence of the tear-shaped projections, which suggests that if you don't have the teardrop-shaped projections, you're going to get the knit lines. No?
That is one way of not having them. I submit that equally fair reading is that if you look at column 6 at the end of the column 6, lines 60 through 65, it talks about the recessed portions. Let me quote from line 64. In addition, since the holes 44 are recessed within the teardrop-shaped groove, any edges on the holes will be prevented from snagging closed. Well, doesn't that fairly convey to one skilled in the art that it's a recessed portion? Is the reason why there's no snagging?
Snagging, but that doesn't address knit lines. No. You don't have. Is there any place in the specification that you describe how to avoid knit lines, other than with the use of the teardrop shape?
The only illustration of a shape shown to avoid knit lines is the teardrop shape.
So, if the object of the invention is to avoid knit lines, and the way the invention avoids knit lines is teardrop-shaped grooves, how can you come in later and say, well, we claim anything that shows up that doesn't have knit lines, which is effectively what your new claims do?
What we are saying, Your Honor, is what Professor Keeson said, and that is that if you show a recessed groove, which is illustrated as a teardrop-shaped groove, and that avoids the knit lines, it's reasonable for one skilled in the art to read this and convey to him that that's a generic description of groove. That's one groove. Teardrop's the adjective. Groove is the noun.
You want to save the rest of your time?
Yes. This court has said in many cases that you are not necessarily limited to your preferred embodiment as shown. Otherwise, there's no need for 112 paragraph 2, which says the scope of claims. Thank you.
Mr. Maxwell.
May it please the court. Good afternoon. My name is Dave Maxwell, representing Electrolux Home Products. The district court's decision should be affirmed for the simple fact that it is a straightforward application of this court's jurisprudence under Section 112, as this court has articulated in Tronzo v. Biomed, Gentry Galley v. Berkline, and indeed in other cases. The district court, in short, did everything right pursuant to this court's directives.
Well, written description, it's a fact issue, correct?
That's correct.
Why isn't there at least enough in terms of expert opinions to throw this, to avoid summary judgment? And it's a difficult issue, I think, a difficult question.
As the district court properly concluded, applying the standards both of the Eighth Circuit, the Regional Circuit, and this court in Tronzo, where there are, the only evidence that they point to are the conclusory legal opinions of their own hired experts. They don't point to anyone in the art, no one in the industry. Their litigation experts, a professor of law and a retired professor of aerodynamics, say only, yes, the written description supports the claims. They do not tie that to a fact report. They do not tie it to a part of the specification that says, and here's why. They say only, yeah, it supports it, which is the ultimate conclusion. As Judge Bennett properly concluded, in order to defeat a well-founded motion for summary judgment, evidence has to be presented by the non-movement sufficient to enable a reasonable jury to find the non-movement's favor. And the only evidence here, that's it, are those conclusory statements. One paragraph of Dr. Hall's affidavit, and two or three, depending on the brief, of Professor Keeson's affidavit. And those are purely legally conclusory statements, and as the district court found under the Assurance Institute case and the Ekelkamp case in the Eighth Circuit, legally conclusive affidavits do not rebut a summary judgment motion. And that's all the evidence there is, Judge Prost. So why was the district court right? What is this case about? It's about the applicant's straightforward principle that an inventor is entitled only to what they disclosed as their invention. And here we have after-added claims, after the accused products were on the market, that are simply not supported by the original description or the original disclosure in the application and claims S5. And district court first properly construed the claims, and as this court just 2 months ago in the Leibniz-Larsen case said, first construe the claims, then do an invalidity or a validity analysis under 112, and that's exactly what Judge Bennett below did. And the claims here, as you pointed out, are in fact limited to the teardrop-shaped groove. What did the inventors invent? A solution to knit lines. They identify it clearly in the solution there. Objects of the invention. We have found two things in the prior art we think are a problem. You can make a basket and perforate it, or you can solve that by molding the basket, but that results in the knit lines problem. And we've solved the knit lines problem by one and only one method, and that's the teardrop-shaped grooves. Specifically, and I believe it was Judge Probst pointed out, the column 3 lines, column 5, lines 48 to 55, expressly disclosed that only the teardrop-shaped invention will solve that problem. Otherwise, the problems of the prior art are inherent in the resulting molded product. That taught, as this court has done and found in Tronzo and in Gentry Gallery and in other lines of cases, that where the patentees clearly articulate why there's a problem in the prior art and a specific area overcomes it, and why that and only that shape will in fact overcome the problem, then their claims are limited under Section 112.
So what's your response? The other side cited kind of in response to that the bottom of column 6, I believe, and the other statements with respect to grooves.
If you look at the entirety of the section of column 6 where it starts in line 48 through 65, what they're talking, first of all, it was not directed to the knit lines problem, as Judge Bryson pointed out. That's talking about the specific statement to which Mr. Cease pointed, the very last sentence of the paragraph, since the holes are recessed in the teardrop-shaped grooves, that's talking about the location of the aperture in the teardrop-shaped groove. It couples it to the teardrop, and that prevents the snagging. Because why? The hole is now away from the clothing in the basket. The clothing can't get on it because it's in that groove. And that has nothing to do with solving the knit line problem. That is an additional benefit of locating the apertures in the particular teardrop-shaped groove, but it is the teardrop-shaped groove, and only that, that solves the knit line problems.
What was the inventor talking about when he testified about not having invented?
The inventor was talking about, he was shown the accused products. Did you invent this? I did not. There had been a discussion at the deposition of what did you invent, tell me when you invented it, the standard inventor's deposition. When presented with the accused product, after a discussion of the apertures and the grooves and the various structures of the basket, he said, I didn't invent that. That is the totality of Mr. Gray's.
Now what does it have to do with the teardrop shape?
Because what he was looking at were the apertures which are in the groove, what they accuse as the grooves, and he said, I didn't invent that. Now, he was not asked, to your point, Judge Mayer, did you invent a teardrop-shaped groove? No, I did not. Or did you invent a teardrop-shaped groove? Yes, I only invented that. But when presented with the accused device...
Which is not teardrop-shaped.
Which is not teardrop-shaped and not even accused to be teardrop-shaped, he said, I didn't invent that. So, this case, in the appellee's and Electrolux's view, falls squarely within Tronso, where this court in Tronso found where a patentee particularly identified a structural shape and particularly identified why that shape was the only way he could solve the problem at issue, that the claims, after added in Tronso also, that were broader than claims with that limitation, simply were not supported by the original description. And we would submit that the facts of Tronso and the law as applied by both the district court and this court in Tronso could not be more on point with exactly what we have here. We have original claims filed and disclosed to the patent office, all of which have the teardrop-shaped limitation. You have the specification before you, which talks about grooves and does so only in the context of the modified teardrop-shaped grooves. After added claims, first 18 months later after the accused products are on the market, the claims suddenly don't have a teardrop limitation, but they do have grooves. That's claim 24. 5 years later, all the other claims at issue have no grooves at all, and those claims are submitted to the patent office. And we would submit that under the Tronso and Gentry-Galley analysis, where that kind of claims are that broad and clearly go beyond the description that the patentees told the world they invented, they are invalid under Section 112, Paragraph 1. Maytag's principal argument in opposition to that is that this is just a preferred embodiment. And they point the court to three and only three parts of their patent that they say supports that argument. The first two we have characterized as boilerplate. Why? Because they precede the detailed written description and they are followed at the end of it. That exact language, this is just a preferred embodiment, we are only intended to be limited by our claims, is in fact in the very patents that this court found invalid under 112 in Tronso. It's in the very patents that this court found invalid under 112 in Gentry Gallery, and even in the Lizard Tech case. That kind of language is either before or after or both in all of those patents. That cannot be a basis for not applying 112 to the written description. The only substantive portion of the disclosure that the appellants point to is found in paragraph 3. I'm sorry, column 3, beginning at approximately line 8 through line 20. It's worth noting that in neither their opening or their reply brief do they cite the entirety of this paragraph, but they want to ask the court to read the paragraph to apply a preferred embodiment analysis to every element that is listed in this paragraph, when what it really does is only say, when referring to a figure and the apertures that are disclosed in that figure, but in a preferred embodiment. However, in a preferred embodiment, these apertures go all the way around the tub. It then goes on to describe other aspects of the structure of the tier, of this tub that they're claiming, this bin basket. So the structure of that paragraph doesn't support the reading, but the structure of the patents doesn't either, because two paragraphs later in this in the patent, and I'm looking at the 909 patent, the disclosure is the same, the numbers are slightly different, where the patentee begins to talk about the apparatus that forms these teardrop-shaped grooves and makes the tub, he again talks about, or they again, they're talking about projections now that are teardrop-shaped, specifically reference that those projections form the grooves he was just talking about, and there's no mention of preferred embodiment whatsoever in that paragraph. Moreover, when the patentee wanted to talk about preferred embodiments, he knew exactly how to do so, and in fact did so. And I would, just by way of example, point the court to column 4, lines 6 through 17, where the patentee now talks about a preferred embodiment on a particular apparatus, where it's the number of cavity sidewall members in the cavity, whether it's 4 or 6, a preferred embodiment is 4. There is no question that this is not merely a preferred embodiment that the inventor is talking about, but as Jeff Prost pointed out, the invention is the structure of the teardrop-shaped groove, and only that structure solves the knit line problems. The patentee says himself that absent that, it's inherent. Finally, they argue...
Well, but why is it not the case that setting aside knit line, the knit line problem altogether, that why don't they have at least some minimal disclosure, let's say, of just holes in grooves to avoid snagging? So that set aside teardrop shaped grooves, you don't need to, they don't, the groove doesn't need to be teardrop shaped, just to have a hole at the bottom of it, presumably. Why can't they point to that language, such as at the bottom of column 6, and say, there you go, even though we refer to it as teardrop. Teardrop there is not essential to the location of the holes, which avoid snagging, and therefore we get any kind of groove, and by extension, I guess, even non-groove.
Well, with respect to Judge Bryson, that's not at all what this patent discloses. At no point does the patent disclose that the invention, section 112 requires an inventor to disclose his or her invention to the public and describe it in particular detail, enable it so that one can do it without undue experimentation. And in this case, section 112, paragraph 1, the written description requirement requires the invention to disclose as his or her invention what it is they're talking about. Not, for example, to talk merely about, well, you can also put holes in a groove and that might avoid burrs, because what they talk about avoiding burrs is the molding process will avoid burrs. That's a problem in the market. Mold solves the perforation issue. Now with perforation, we have knit lines. The only way to solve knit lines is to have the teardrop shape. Moreover, there's prior art of record where it was the 413 Japanese patent application discloses molding a plastic washing machine basket with an automatic mold where the holes are molded in the sidewall and they're in the groove.
Well, this seems, I was going to ask you that, if there is prior art. This seems to be a very elaborate way to get at a problem which seemed like it was probably more directly addressed by the question of whether the broader claims read on pre-existing prior art. Why are we presented with this rather... I mean, these written description cases are always tricky, and if there is governing prior art, as you say, why isn't that the issue that was presented to us? There must be some kind of problem with the prior art.
I would submit to the court that that was briefed to the district court, and the district court ruled in this on this issue and only this issue, and mooted all the other basis of our what we believe was a well-founded motion for summary judgment. So,
now,
with respect, it is the case. I would also like to point out that the inventor himself noted that the non-teardrop-shaped grooves could not be molded, which is to respond to your question, why couldn't you just put it in any shaped groove? For example, what the inventors really want to do, and this is in our brief, is mold a circle. But you can't mold a circle and get it over the bumps that actually cause that. It sticks and it can't come off. How did they solve that? Made the groove elongated and teardrop so that it would in fact come off the mold core. The inventors themselves acknowledged that the groove had a teardrop shape in order to actually be usable.
Okay.
Now, I recognize my opponent did not argue the enablement issues, so I will not argue that point unless the court has questions about it. So in sum, what we have is a very straightforward application of this court's jurisprudence under Section 112. The Tronzo case tells us what 112 means with these after-added claims. Gentry Gallery does too, where the patentees disclose their invention as a particular aspect directed to a particular problem, as they did here, then after adding claims that go beyond the breadth of those claims are invalid under 112.
Thank you.
Your Honors, let me go back to the Professor Keeson affidavit. It is unfair to say that should be ignored because it is legally conclusory. Professor Keeson's affidavit, and by the way, yes, he's a lawyer, but don't penalize him for being a lawyer. He also has a PhD in engineering. And he has a joint appointment at the University of Illinois from the law school and engineering school. He says in his affidavit there are four reasons why he believes that a fair reading of this context is that groove, teardrop-shaped groove, is just illustrative of the generic term groove. First, he says there is no specific reference that denigrates other shapes. Secondly, he says there is no requirement in patent law that every shape of groove be disclosed in order to claim grooves in general. And third, he says these examiners were very skilled examiners with distinguished backgrounds, 1,900 applications examined by one, 900 by another, and they never made a written description requirement. And finally, these are mechanical inventions. This court has consistently said there is no bright line test here on written description, and I think rightly so. And not to be lost sight of the fact is that this is a mechanical invention, and in mechanical inventions it is very common that one embodiment supports claims that are broader than the specifics of the embodiment shown.
All right. Thank you very much. Case is submitted.
Thank you.